And we're back, ladies and gentlemen, on the Sleep Matthews Radio Show. Thank you for listening in wherever you are around the world. Huge day today. I've got a great talent and gift to the planet, if you will. Taki Grant is with me today. He's the executive producer, writer, and director of Hoppy, and began his journey as a filmmaker in 2006 when he released his first film, Nubia, The Untold Story. His groundbreaking follow-up documentary, The Tekken, Uncovering the Influence of Ancient Egypt, secured his critical acclaim as a filmmaker. And he's with us today to discuss his latest documentary, simply entitled Hoppy. Welcome, my good friend, Hotep.
Hotep, how are you feeling?
I'm great. I'm great. So talk to me about Hoppy. What is Hoppy, and why was this an important film for you to make?
Wow. Hoppy is such an important issue because it deals with a very critical aspect of our lives, and that's economics. But the film itself deals with the history of economics, or the mechanics, if you will. And it goes back to early times, and it talks about the ecology and how the ecology is such an important role in just the mindset of people and how it developed who we are as individuals or as communities and nations and so forth. The film deals, it starts with early civilization and, or if you will, the dawn of civilization, pre-Nile Valley. It talks about the transformation of the Sahara, the rainforest going into the Sahara Desert, and people migrating to river valley systems. Thus, you have Nile Valley system, the Niger Valley system, and so forth. But in the Nile Valley system, something unprecedented took place, where economics, politics, and culture came together seamlessly in this unified capacity that built these great monuments we know as the pyramids, the temples, and so forth. So the film essentially really, really starts there, and it gives you a snapshot of Nile Valley history and the relationship between kingdoms of the Nile. So when we talk about Nile history, a lot of times, you know, often Egyptologists, if you will, they will pit Nubia against Egypt or Nubia against Kemet or Kush or vice versa or what have you, and try to make it seem like they were two separate ethnic groups as opposed to one African nation. Hoppy deals with something that they don't talk about when we talk about these transcontinental migrations. And that's really what fueled the Nile, or really developed Nile Valley civilization, people migrating into the Nile. But the Nile Valley migrations didn't stop. When pyramids were built, people kept coming in for thousands of years, kept moving back and forth between East and West Africa. So these migrations changed the landscape, and these were just African people. And at some time, it upset the balance, and this is where a lot of the wars came from. So Hoppy deals with that directly. Then we move, after we leave Nile Valley civilization, after the fall of Kemet, people begin to migrate back to West Africa or Central Africa, and you see the emergence of these great African nations or kingdoms in West Africa. And at that point, we begin to talk about the emergence of the development of Western civilization economically through the transatlantic slave trade. Early America, then it moves more into the contemporary piece. Actually, the film really starts really now and does a 360-degree synopsis of human development through economics.
That is absolutely amazing. You know, it's fascinating that what made you decide to do this film at this particular time? Because a lot of us don't really think about the economics of Africa, that you had to have economics to build such civilization around the world, literally.
Right. Wow. So this is something, actually the title and part of the premise was initially developed in 2011. I decided to take a step back and a backseat from doing films. You know, Hidden Colors came out and all those things. They started coming out after the Tekken. So those brothers did a great job. So I was like, you know what, that's really what the focus is right now. And a lot of my friends and contemporaries kept saying, Taki, you gotta do something. And I was like, well, I don't know. I wasn't really interested. I was trying to go in a different direction, actually develop a screenplay for an actual film. I was thinking about something a little different as opposed to a documentary. And they said, well, what about economics? And I was like, that's a really interesting topic. But then I realized that it tied directly into the development of Nile Valley civilization in terms of the relationships of the people, because the Nile is our victory. And Dr. Jeffries always says that reclaiming the Nile is a victory in which we need to proclaim. And that's really our corridor. And it always has been throughout history. The now has been our victory. And this is why it's always been fought over. Whether figuratively or literally, you know, we've always fought over the now. Or the ailing body Egypt. And Destruction of Black Civilization, one of the first books I read into my during my awakening, it really made me understand just how important the Nile Valley is. People don't really understand that. But if it wasn't so important, they wouldn't be trying to take it from us so much. And this goes back thousands and thousands of years. We've always been fighting for this. So when I begin to look at the kingdoms of the Nile and the role they played, and just how they have taken Kemet out of Africa and placed Egypt in the Middle East, I realize how important establishing the relationship between Kemet and Nubia is, of Kemet and Kush. I said, wow, that's the key right there. Once we break that, unravel that, I said, yeah, this is what we do. So Hapi really deals with that. So when you talk about economics and the relationship between the kingdoms of the Nile, their relationship essentially was an economic relationship because they traded. That was their primary trading partners. You know, the kingdoms essentially to the south. And they shared, you know, obviously this wonderful ecosystem through the river, which helped develop the civilization. So it all ties in perfectly. So the timing was right. And everything started to come together one by one, step by step. I said, you know what? Now is the time because, like, all the pieces begin to sit in place. The piece were going to Ghana. And one of the important things about the film, and everyone needs to notice, that much part of the film was shot on location. We don't really have it B-roll heavy. So when we speak about going to Africa, we had two trips to Africa. We did one trip this year when we were in Kemet, where we filmed for 10 days in various different locations. Last year this time, we were in Ghana for the Emancipation Day celebration. We filmed for 10 days in Amina Slave Fort, all through Accra, Ghana, Cape Coast. That is essentially backbone of the film. You know, we were in the top museums around the world. So this film is it's a documentary, but you know, it's on a different level in terms of the content and the quality of what people receive.
No question about it. And you have literally superstars in this film who are narrating and offering expert advice and content and character to this film. You know, my gosh, Dr. Leonard Jeffries, Dr. Professor James Small, Dr. Wade Nobles, Boyce Watkins. I mean, the list goes on and on. How did you go about as you were developing this film, creating storylines and what have you, and your process? How did you develop your experts and say, okay, these are the people that I want to feature, both to narrate the ancient African piece, but also all the way up to modern day times?
Wow. So, you know, this film is in a very organic process, in that, as we've gone on, it's kind of developed and taken another mind, a shape of its own. And the original cast, if you will, was basically selected because of certain various different disciplines. And the film follows the three elements of civilization, or the three elements that it takes to develop any civilization, which again is economics, politics, and culture. So the people in the film represent that. And depending on your certain level of discipline or your expertise, you were chosen for that particular role to be categorized. Whether you have economic background, like Dr. Boyce Watkins, he's one of our great Black economists of this day. You also have Dr. Julianne Malveaux, who a lot of people don't know about, but she's a heavyweight. And she was brought in. We actually went down to D.C. with her, shot her a location in front of the Capitol, because she's also involved in the political landscape as well. So then you have the cultural piece with your various historians, Dr. Lynn Jeffries, like you stated, Professor James Smalls. We also wanted to have someone to really psychoanalyze the process, we brought in the great black psychologist, Dr. Wade Nobles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's one thing to talk about it, but the question is, why do we do the things that we do?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the Dr. Wade Nobles comes in, as an expert. Dr. Bruce Williams from the Oriental Institute in Chicago, he's a great historian. He, in 1970, I'm not sure the exact year, I think early 1970s, he released a document which spoke of a fine, and the New York Times published it, and it spoke of, it basically gave premise to the fact that Egypt is the daughter of Nubia, and talks about this incense burner that was found in a place called Kustu, Cemetery L, which is in southern Egypt. And this was during the construction of the Aswan High Dam that they had these excavation works that were, thousands of people were there trying to hurry up and gather the artifacts before the Nile flooded the area and created what's now called Lake Nasser. So in this area in southern Egypt, in Kustu, they found that, again, this incense burner, which replicated the iconography of kingship in the Nile. But the thing was, this was prior to dynastic Egypt. And this is also what they will refer to today as ancient Nubia. So it gives credence of the precedence that Nubia preceded Egypt. And all the aspects of royalty and kingship, the regalia associated with it, was developed there than it went into what we know as Kemet. So this is a very important piece, but we talk about it quite often in our discussions. You know, we use it to reclaim the Nile, if you will. We use it to, you know, dispel any myths that, you know, certain people, Egyptologists today, or people who may not want to associate Kemet with being African. So it was very important to have this in the film. So we actually were there in Chicago, and we filmed Dr. Bruce Williams giving us an explanation about the piece, because he was one of the people that were there when they actually excavated it. So this is a very important element that's in the film that, I've been talking about it for 30 years, but that was the first time for me to actually go see it and see what it looks like and have, the expert who was there and they found it to really give an explanation on it. So it's just a lot of little pieces like that, a lot of little hidden gems. People will, for the first time, they will see these things, up close, live in the person. The only thing I've seen before was pictures of it, and not even really good pictures, but we were honored to have that opportunity.
Well, it's absolutely amazing, and, you've been in this game for about 30 years, and what I didn't know, because, I had a conversation with Dr. Leonard Jeffries, thanks to you, and he shared a great story about you. You guys have known each other for over 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah, we, and that goes back to your earlier question. We, one of our earlier journeys was when we went to the Sudan, and we got the opportunity to visit the great sites in the Sudan, in Marawi, in Kerma, and Jebel Barku, Nuri Kuru. And it was a fascinating trip. That was actually my second time there. But having had the opportunity to visit, Kush with Dr. Jeffries was amazing. And that's really what started everything. That really was a genesis for the filmmaking, because I just went there with a camera, video camera, and a still camera, and was just taking pictures and video. I wasn't really preparing myself to do films, but, I'm sitting on this content. People are like, this is, amazing stuff. No one has this. Mm-hmm. But I'm not thinking in those terms. People were like, especially from our community, no one's really gone there and brought this stuff back. Like, we got to do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, sure. Then we just started putting it together, and it came out wonderfully. And then that's how the whole process got started. Like I said, very organically. It wasn't even trying to do it. It was just something that, it was just there. It kept falling into place. And this is sort of how Happy happened. It just fell into place. Sometimes that these things are bigger than you, because mm-hmm. there's other things, other forces, the ancestors are behind it. I wasn't really trying to do this, but it was something that, it has to happen. So this is
you learn so much in doing a film and researching and doing a documentary, but you also knew a lot prior to going in. What did you learn about both yourself and about Africa that you did not know before?
Wow. one of the things that I learned about myself is just how important it is. I'm going to go back to something people talk about quite frequently these days in terms of economics and like being your own boss. I know Dr. Boyce Watkins talks about that a lot. Leaving the corporate plantation, developing your own business, so forth and so on. And there's a lot of personal skills or certain skills that you have to have in order to do that. And if you don't have a certain level of commitment, a certain level of drive, you're going to be in trouble. So one of the things that I learned quickly was that organizational skills are paramount, and you have to develop these in order to succeed. You have to be able, your drive has to be, you have to be very committed to whatever it is that you're doing. Mm-hmm. And not saying it wasn't there me, but it was something I got to really, you had to push, you know, yourself and really, really go forward. Also is, speaking of economics, the funding of the film has been a challenge, and a lot of people have supported it, and a lot of the finance of the film came through out of pocket. But whatever you want to do, just believe in yourself, and it will happen. So all the doubts and misnomers you may have in your mind, this is something I had to push out and had to get out and really just keep the drive going. So that was really, really a big part. In terms of Africa, wow, I learned so much during this journey. And just to go back a little bit, a lot of this really started because prior to even doing films, I was organizing trips. I had a company, and we take people to the now, once, twice a year. And I've been doing it since like 1999. Okay. And I take groups. It's called I Kid Tours. I'm taking groups to Kemet, you know, to the pyramids, so forth, so on. This has always been a tremendous passion. And we'll actually go in throughout Europe a lot of times and other African countries just to understand the development of civilization. So this last trip, one of the things that an opportunity to really learn was, this is a big part of the film for me, is what we call the first African union. And I'm kind of giving it away here. But certain African countries or communities came together during the 17th century BC to repel the Asiatic forces known as the Hyksos. Mm. And this is very important because it's not really spoken about in this manner, but in Happy we do. There's a place in Egypt called Delbalis. In ancient times, of course, the Jethro Tawi. And there, you have the location or the settlement of a fortress in which these groups came together, you know, collectively as a unified force to fight for their liberation. Mm. And it's very important to note because it's not explained this way. Because right after the Hyksos were expelled, there was a war that opened up from between Kemet and Kerma, which is one of the great kingdoms to the south. It's like around the third cataract, and cataracts are locations in the Nile on which the water or the flow of the water is impeded. It's almost like thinking of a cataract in someone's eye when your vision is impeded by, you know, mm-hmm. an obstruction. Mm-hmm. So it could be a waterfall, it could be huge boulders, so forth, but it was areas which by ship it was impassable because of these cataracts. So the third cataract in the Nile, using their numbering system, a lot of our scholars like to use the fact that being at the Nile flows from south to north, the lower cataracts are further south, as opposed to the first cataract being in Aswan, which is the most northern point of the cataracts. That would be, in fact, which you would look at reverse, because now it's in close south to north. That would be the sixth cataract. So the third cataract is in a place called Dongola Kerma, where this ancient site was built. And Dr. Jeffries and I had the opportunity to go there with a great Dafufa there. And the ancient city is actually still there. You can see the settlements of it. So anyway, this war opened up between Khmer and Kush, and it lasted for about 30 years. But they don't talk about who they were actually fighting because there were large groups. And I've asked this question several times, and they don't want to answer the question because it gives credence to the African presence throughout the whole process. But there were large groups of what we call Kerma Nubians that were in Kemet fighting along the Kemetiyu or the Egyptians against the Hyksos. But after the Hyksos were expelled and defeated, there was a war that opened up against Kerma. But the question now stands is, who were they fighting if the people were there with them in large numbers, as all historians may want to say, because they found all the pottery, the ancient burials, they were there with them, with Tekken Rata, Amosa Mafatari, Amosa, Kamosa, or the great family of the 17th dynasty. They were there with these people. So if you're there with these people, who you now turn around and fight? This gives credence to the emergence of different migrations still coming into the Nile Valley, flows of thousands of people. Once the ecosystem changes in certain areas, people are still coming into the Nile. It doesn't, the landscape doesn't change with the development of civilization or the development of pyramids. People are still coming in from other parts of Africa in large numbers, and these tribes are coming in. They're settling along the Nile. One of the other great things we had the opportunity to do is the Haku story. We talked about Haku for thousands of years, obviously. But since I've really been in this thing, I've been speaking about him and just how important this individual was in terms of his trade expeditions to Gam and to the south. And he was a governor at the time. So now you have the economics because he's a person who's trading, but he's also a governor. So you have the political side as well. We talk about economic, politics, and culture in 3000 BC, you know? So Haku was going back and forth, north to south, and he's trading, but he speaks about it in the walls of his tomb. He talks about how he's afraid for his life because there's these groups now that emerged in what they call the Middle Nile region. And the Middle Nile region is very key because whoever controlled the Middle Nile region controlled the economic flow into the Nile because that was the trade corridors. And it was always about the trade corridors, whether it was there or whether it was in the Delta, which the Hyksos controlled later, because that was the trade corridors in and out of Africa into Europe, into Asia. So trading was always very important. And once the empire expanded, after the Hyksos were expelled, one of the great places that they were able to establish themselves in was the Kadesh. And the Kadesh story is really interesting. This is during the time of Ramses II, how these people here formed the first peace treaty between the Hittites and the Egyptians. And this peace treaty you can actually see on display in the United Nations today. But Kadesh was so important to the Egyptians because it was a trade corridor to Asia Minor. So trading posts was a very important thing, even back in ancient times. And this is really how important, I guess you could say, how important money was. But money, we know, didn't come later on to the Romans. But in terms of trading and bartering and economics, it was something that Africans developed and something we had a stranglehold on for thousands and thousands of years. Mm-hmm. So the importance of, answer the question, the importance of what I learned was just how huge economics is to human beings. It's just how important it is to us, and we may downplay it, but everything that we do somehow or another flows through that discipline.
Absolutely. Wow. That's incredible. Now, another laureate that you have in the film we mentioned earlier, and I also had him on the show, and that was Professor James Small. What was his contribution to the film?
Oh, wow. Like Dr. Lennon Jeffries, Professor James Small, and I, we have a very special relationship. And it's very important to note that their contribution goes more than just the on-screen input. There's a lot of behind-the-screen stuff that takes place. A lot of the film, really, and by and large, developed by way of conversation, one-on-one conversation with the two of them, late night talks in the home, just sitting down, just talking, getting mentored in a sense throughout, you know, several years and understanding where certain key parts of history need to be highlighted and documented visually So President James Smalls plays a critical role in that because, you know, he and I really talk a lot about, he even actually named this the subtitle of the film, Role of Economic Development Civilization. That's his.
Wow.
A lot of the connections, this is another big part of the film too, which it, now as I'm speaking to you, it comes out because there's so much really, and you got to excuse me for this, because we really almost have three films in one. And that's going to be really the challenge to put it all together because we have so much of the ancient Egyptian piece, but it's not a film about ancient Egypt. People need to understand that. And we have so much about the transatlantic piece, the Middle Ages in terms of dealing with West Africa. We have so much of that. And it's not a film about slavery, you know? Then we have a lot of contemporary America and contemporary times, early America and contemporary times, but it's not a film about that. It's a snapshot of economic history from the beginning of civilization to now. So it's really three pieces being condensed into one. So with that in mind, when we begin to talk about, this is a very, very important piece. We had a brother, Harold Johnson, Osoy Motep, gave us this, and Dr. Akedi as well, but Dr. Akedi Ammon, talking about the confluence of civilization between African nations. This is the powerful part because we've been able to document visually and speak to the connection of these people linguistically and culturally using words from the work of Dr. Shekhan Diop, and he talked about the Wolof being connected to the Metanexia. Oh, yeah, it is. The Gwa, the Iwa, the Yoruba, all these different Ikan, all these different African groups have a commonality in terms of language and culture, which directly is connected to the Nile Valley. So it's a very powerful documentary because we talk to that. Because when you start to speak about people moving back and forth, people want to know, they want to have proof. So we're giving them the proof through the culture and through the language. And we're connecting the dots between East and West Africa, showing that you're one people. You know? So the people now that you see there were once there. But we know this because if you look down the tree, you can see it. So that's a very powerful piece. And that's, again, in the film.
Wow. Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, you know you're going to have to see this film. It's probably, in my opinion, one of the most important films of our time to watch. So we need to create a global effort to make sure that this film is seen, not just, you know, throughout all the cities and states here in America, but all the continents on the planet. Wherever there's melanated people, this film needs to be shown and seen, so that we can really understand the power of our true history. Now, you mentioned earlier Dr. Wade Nobles brought the psychological aspect to the film. Walk us through a little bit of that in terms of what he brought to the table with his unique wisdom and years of experience.
Wow. you know, most of our people are East Coast people. I won't say most, but the core group of people in the film live here, kind of in the New York area, and he's one person. Wow, I wish he lived over here because with him, a lot of times it's unprecedented access. But and I say that to say that it's not enough of Wade in the project because he just has a tremendous amount of insight, knowledge, and I've known Dr. Wade Nobles for quite some time, and I've introduced to him at one of the ASCAC conferences. The Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization, this organization started in the early 80s with Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, Dr. Milana Karenga, and several others. But this has been really the forefront of the mental struggle for the minds of African people. ASCAT was, you know, it's really still at that forefront. And like people like, Dr. Asa Hilliard, and opportunity to meet these people. Some of them have made their transition, some of them are ancestors now. But just to meet them and talk to them on several occasions, you know, years past, I was definitely honored to have that opportunity. So being close to Dr. Jeffries and Professor Smalls also lent me the opportunity to have a special relationship with Dr. Nobles. His contribution, again, is unprecedented because he gives us a discipline that no one else really has in terms of being able to dissect human thinking and be able to dissect the who, what, when, and why, but more so than the why. Why do we do the things that we do in regards to our movements, the valuation of items and goods? Because, you know, we put value on things based on our wants, needs, and desires. Mm-hmm. And if the valuation doesn't necessarily, you know, and it's very different from someone else because their value systems are totally different. So this is now how economics is developed. Economics is developed because I want something that you have that's more important to me than it is to you.
Mm.
So I'll give you this for that. But if we don't value that, then that thing has no value to me. Then therefore, I have a different leverage when I begin to trade with you. That's very important. That's extremely important. But that right there is the foundation for what we do, especially in modern times.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk about another part of the film is today's generation, contemporary view and landscape, particularly with black young children, black people in general, not just young people. It's just, you know, we have this consumerism mentality, this mm-hmm. $1.3 trillion of economic spending we did last year and consumerism, and if put the money put together and aggregated, we'd be the 16th most wealthiest nation on earth. But why aren't we doing some more important things with our money? Because we have this warped view of a value. And whether it's $500 sneakers, $500 jeans,
mm-hmm.
you know, $300 belts, and people who don't have no money. It's one thing if you, Jay-Z or Beyonce, and you decide to do
sure.
something like that with people who have absolutely no money, and they would turn around, they would stand online all night, several hours, they would camp outside for a pair of sneakers. I don't understand it. You know? But, you know, again, it's the have-nots, but it's a very warped view, so the film talks about stuff like that, and why do we feel we have the need to do this? And this is where, again, where an expert like a Dr. Nobles comes in.
Wow. Oh, that's powerful. Okay, so... ladies and gentlemen, of course, you know that Taki and Dr. Nobles, Professor Smalls, Dr. Jeffries are coming to Sacramento for a private screening, a private moderation panel discussion for which I'll be moderating. I'm honored to be a part of it. But I know for the people who are listening, who are not in Sacramento, won't be in that area, I would actually ask you guys listening to this. This is a 2-day event because also African Americans for Balanced Health on Saturday, the private screening and moderation is going to be Friday evening, the 27th, October 27th, but October 28th, Saturday, Professor James Small and Dr. Wade Nobles will be lecturing, and we're also going to try to see if we can get Dr. Lynn Jeffries to put in at least 15 minutes, which is impossible for him to do because he has so much to give. You need to fly in for this event. We don't know when there will be these three dynamos on one stage, one platform for 2 days in a row, plus a private screen of Hoppy the film. Taki, please walk us through what are we expecting for this amazing event that's happening Friday night with the screening. How long is it? And because it's not the full film, is that correct?
Well, it's funny because we did two screenings in New York earlier this year, January and February, and we showed about an hour piece. And since then, we've been able, obviously, we're still filming, to obtain a lot of footage. So what they will see in California would pretty much be about 90% completed.
Oh, wow.
It would pretty much just be more cosmetic than anything after that. But the plan is, by the time we come to California, you will see most of what we shot in Egypt, more of the West African piece, individual Dr. Jacqueline Badalora, who I met through you, all those elements will now be a part of the more completed version you know, so they will be definitely, they will see that in the end of October.
I completely forgot, which is so crazy, I completely forgot Dr. Jacqueline Battalora, author of Birth of a White Nation, is in the film. What was her contribution?
Wow, early American development.
Wow.
And also the mindset of European people, which speaks a lot to the alt-right, that's what's going on now. So the film is very, very much on time, if you will, because there's so much happening today. This, the extension of the DACA bill that President Obama signed, and this reversal of it now by President Trump. All this is very much about what Dr. Battalora shared. She came in, flew in from Chicago, came to New York. We filmed it down in Lower Manhattan with the Statue of Liberty in the background, and really to speak to that whole immigration piece. So I tell you, it's on time. It's on time. She gave us a great interview, and look forward. The footage is amazing, and look forward to sharing it.
Oh man, this is extremely exciting. All right. So how can people? Well, I know you have a trailer. How can people see like a snippet of the film, like the movie trailer? Where can they go? What's the web address that they can go and look at? And you're also still raising funds to recoup and to recover and also do some post work. Where can people go also to that want to contribute to help make sure that this film gets out and is fully funded?
Well, GoFundMe is always a great way. Everything is Happy Films, whether it's on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram. You can write to Happy Films, H-A-P-I, two separate words, H-A-P-I, F-I-L, and that's Happy Films. And it comes right up. Same thing with the GoFundMe, which is a very important aspect. And like I said, there have been shout-outs to all people who've helped out during this process. The contributions are greatly, greatly appreciated. And it's helped keep the engine going. And really also help with the inspiration, because even if it's $1, $2, $3, $4, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
You don't understand just how important that is, not even from an economic standpoint, but from an emotional and a get-up-and-go standpoint, when you see people that actually really believe in what you're doing and they support you more so from that way, and it's phenomenal. Sometimes people are like, I don't have a lot of money. It doesn't really matter, $2, $3, but it just helps. And being like, wow, people really believe in what we're doing. And the times when, you know, because this has been a long process. We've been basically in production for about a year and a half now. And that year and a half, you have your ups and your downs, your trials and tribulations. And as human beings, you're going to hit walls. And you know that people are really, really behind you. That gives you another, you know, helps you, you know, fill your lungs back up again and gets you going and helps you finish this marathon. I liken this process to actually running the marathon, and you get to points where, you know, you do your fast walk and you jog mm-hmm. a little slow jog, and then you pick it up at the finish line. So that's kind of like what this process is. And the people along the side of the road who are handing you the cups of water are likened to the people really who's been supporting this process. So I use that analogy to say that even with, you know, a cup of water, whatever it is, $2 donation, it really tremendously helps. Or you could buy a T-shirt, a poster, whatever. But those things help, because it's that and the cheering, which really helps the runners finish the race. So
mm-hmm.
Really appreciate and applaud the support, and look forward to people continue support. Greatly appreciate it.
Oh, man, this is absolutely amazing. All right, so Happy Film is, you can just type that into Google or your preferred search engine, and everything will come up. And GoFundMe, go there, and then type in Happy Film, and that will come up as well, and you can donate as well. And if you're in Sacramento, you've got to come to this event. This is a once-in-a-lifetime event. And even if you're not in Sacramento, if you're driving distance or if you can afford to get on that plane and get over here, it's going to be 2 days that will change your life. Particularly, it will change the life and trajectory of the young people, your children, by understanding how commerce works. You're going to be able to give something to your children that perhaps you were not able to do on your own, particularly if it's just them watching the media and being a part of this crazy American society. You're going to learn Black history, African history like never before. Taki, I can't appreciate you enough. You are a filmmaking genius, and I appreciate you sharing your time with me today and look forward to you coming on to my live video show that's going to air around the world, and so more people will get a chance to know about you and know about this amazing film, Poppy.
Okay. I just want to just piggyback on something you said, because I want to highlight this. It's something you said was very important. To have Dr. Jeffries, Professor Smalls, and Dr. Nobles, like you said, on one stage and one night, time is our only issue there. Because it's, when I say dynamic, or like it's you don't really have that opportunity to have. We don't even have Professor Smalls and Dr. Jeffries together a lot. But
right.
to have them,
right.
all three of them there together,
that's right.
we need about a week, to be honest with you, because the wealth of information, the history, and just the stories that they've lived and the journeys is so fascinating. And like I said before, a lot of what goes into this film really is the insight that's been given throughout the years, and it's tremendous. And I cannot be overstated in, if you don't come out for the film, come out to see them, because to have them there like that is so powerful.
Oh.
And like I said, it's a 2-day event. You just got to come out to see this. If you're in Northern California area, if you're not, especially in the West Coast, in New York, we're a little spoiled. But out there, this is unprecedented. So I implore people to really, really try to make it out. Also, you know, for the tickets, for both events, actually, you can go online to Eventbrite and type in Happy Films, and it'll come up, and you can get the tickets there, or the American for Better Health. Also with that event there for Saturday, it's also on Eventbrite. For Friday and Saturday, you can get tickets there on the web portal. And please, it's for $25 for adults, for elders and students, it's $15 for the Friday night event. So this is a great opportunity, definitely, and your support goes to a great project. And when you come out and you see it, people understand, like, wow, this is well worth it.
Yeah, when you think about the amount of money you spend on coffee and all of the miscellaneous things that, you know, doesn't really contribute to your life, the cost of this is priceless. It is absolutely priceless. This is something that would normally cost, if you were to bring in all of these laureates, just the three of them, not including the people in the film, you would be out of hundreds of thousands of dollars. So you have to really understand the magnitude of what it means to have these icons all in one room together for the first time. This is unprecedented.
And that also goes to the fact that, excuse me, something you asked earlier about why. Like, why Happy? Why is this film now? And I've always been in love with history, even before my awakening, you know, coming into consciousness. I loved American history. I've just always been fascinated with people and social studies.
Mm-hmm.
This is what actually was the genesis of getting into filmmaking, but then I realized one thing about documentary films, there's so much, we're in an information age now, and there's so much information out there. People can get it from here, there, whatever, like that. So Happy is a formula. It's a blueprint. Not only is it historical, but it also will show you who you are and why you're doing the things that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big parts of the film is the fact that it's solution-oriented. We're not just going to give you a film without giving you some type of solutions and things that we can do
mm-hmm.
to correct our behavior or to improve our lives and improve ourselves. And Happy's more than just a film. We all started what's called the Happy Movement and really started to push for the economic awakening. So the theme of the film, if you will, is economic empowerment through economic literacy. And it's very important to understand that economic empowerment through economic literacy. So the economic literacy is learning about the mechanics of economics through the history of it, so forth and so on. And then from that, using that formula, we will begin to empower ourselves economically.
Wow.
Thus helping with our overall liberation. So very important. It's not just a film. Hoppy's a formula, Hoppy's a blueprint. Using the system, again, of the ancestral system of economics, politics, and culture, and how they were able to put those three elements together to develop civilization.
Fantastic. My brother, I appreciate you sharing your time with me. Again, I'm looking forward to our live video show interview as well, and upcoming conversations with Professor Small and Dr. Jeffries and Dr. Nobles. Let's make this film one of the biggest and most important documentaries of our time. I appreciate you, my brother.
All right. Thank you. Likewise.
All right. Hotep. We'll see you guys next time or hear you guys next time on the Philippe Matthews Show. Take care, everybody.